श्लोके
भगवद्गीतमश्लोके
भक्तिर्भवति
नैष्ठिकी
Canto 1, Chapter 16. How Parikshit received the age of Kali. Text 35. And 36 also, because that is the last verse of this chapter, and there is no purport. 35.
Kava sahit viraham purushottamasya.
Covered with grass, which appear like hairs standing on me out of pleasure. Purport. There were chances of separation between the Lord and his thousands of queens because of the Lord's being absent from home. But as far as his connection with earth was concerned, the Lord would traverse the earth with his lotus feet, and therefore there was no chance of separation. When the Lord left the surface of the earth to return to his spiritual abode, the earth's feelings of separation were therefore more acute. Text 36. I will read the verse myself in the translation.
तयोरेवं कथयतो पृथ्वी धर्मयोस्तदा परीक्षिन्नाम राजर्षिः
Praptah Prachim Sarasvatim. Translation. While the earth and the personality of religion were thus engaged in conversation, the saintly king Parikshit reached the shore of the Sarasvati river, which flowed towards the east. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 16th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali. Om Jnanati Virantasya Jnanajana Shalakaya Chakshura Mitam Jinas Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutate Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Svadanandikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Mutapadam Shri Guru Vashyamashtam Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahaganam Nathapitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Sadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Shat Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Shri Veshaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamne Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschaya Vishakhanvitam Vancha Kalpata Rubhyascha Nipasindhu Yadevacha Patitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Vyakuna Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. So we are hearing about a conversation between Mother Earth, who has taken the form of a cow, and the personality of religion, Dharma, who has taken the form of a bull. We understand that everything is personal. Everything has a personification because there is personality behind everything. There is a person who controls everything. So just as there is a person who controls the country, the king or the prime minister or the president and so on, there is a person living in every home, there is a person driving every vehicle or car. So there is a person behind every planet. There is a predominating deity. So the predominating deity of the earth planet is called Mother Earth. She is our mother, as we were discussing yesterday, because she nourishes us. She gives birth to us. And she looks after us. She is called Bhumi, or Prithvi. So she is very aggrieved because of the sinful activities of the human population that resides on earth. Inasmuch as a mother is very aggrieved when the children become very troublesome. The mother faces a great deal of discomfort when the children misbehave and cause havoc everywhere. So because of the sinful population, Mother Earth is feeling greatly burdened. And she comes across the personification of religion, who is also aggrieved. Because the human population has given up all principles of religion. And they're leading sinful lives. So Mother Earth and the personification of religion are revealing their hearts to each other and sharing their woes. And then Mother Earth, in the concluding part of this chapter, is now remembering the Supreme Lord. In the previous verse, she somewhat pacifies and reassures the personality of religion that don't worry. In order to mitigate your distress and mine as well, the Supreme Lord has advented in the Yadu dynasty. And then referring to that same Supreme Lord, who is the life and soul of his devotees, she says, who can tolerate separation from him? Because Mother Earth is a great devotee of the Lord. She is actually a consort of the Lord. And because she is a great devotee of the Lord, which means that she loves God, therefore, when she is not able to see the Lord, she feels great separation. So she says to the personification of religious dharma that especially when one is feeling grief, one feels separation even more from one's beloved. The Supreme Lord, who is our life and soul, whom we love more than anything in this world, is not to be seen in our midst with our physical eyes. Spiritually, he is always present, but we are unable to see him with these eyes. And therefore, this separation from the Supreme Lord is intolerable. This is a symptom of a great devotee of the Lord. From whom do we feel separation? Only from one whom we love. If you don't love someone, then out of sight, out of mind. Out of mind, out of sight, out of mind. So when you don't see that person, you forget about that person. It doesn't matter that you don't see that person anymore, because there is no love for that person. But where there is love for a person, then there's another principle. Then there's another principle that applies, and that is called absence makes the heart grow fonder. Which means that the more we are separated from the person whom we love, the more that we grieve. And this is the situation with Mother Earth. Because she is a great devotee of the Lord, and so is Dharma, they are both feeling intense separation. This feeling of separation is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to teach. How to love Krishna in a mood of separation. Srila Prabhupada says that following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we must learn how to love Krishna in a mood of separation. This is actually the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness. In his eight prayers, famously known as the Shikshashtakam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has prayed, Yugayitam Nimeshena Chakshusha Pravishayitam Shunyayitam Jagat Sarvam Govinda Vilahe. He says, O Govinda, O Krishna, every moment or fraction of a moment that I am away from you, it seems like an age has passed. An age implying in this context 12 years or more. And this separation, tears are constantly flowing from my eyes. Chakshusha pravishayitam, tears of separation. And in that stage of separation, I feel that time gap to be increasingly expanding. Shunyayitam jagat sarvam, and the whole world seems to be vacant and empty in your absence. Govinda virahena mein viraha, the word viraha in Sanskrit means feelings that arise in times of separation. Now, this is experienced even by us human beings here in ordinary human relationships. If there is someone to whom we have been very attached for a long time, when that person leaves or dies, or we are separated in some way, then that feeling of separation becomes very intense. So we can only imagine how strong those feelings are on the spiritual platform. When the love for the Supreme Lord is so intense, so deep, so powerful, that the feelings of separation can be overwhelming. And the devotee loses any semblance of external normalcy. The devotee then cries tears of ecstasy, like torrents of rain, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Chakshusha Pravishayatam. And there is a feeling of vacancy, or that everything is zero in this world. The world doesn't make any sense anymore. And this feeling specifically was demonstrated or exhibited by the residents of Vrindavan. And even more particularly, the gopis of Vrindavan. When Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura, and then he eventually left Mathura to go to Dwarka. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to teach us the mood of loving Krishna as the Vrijavasis did, the residents of Vrindavan. This is the highest example of pure devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. No one can love Krishna more than the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis. So in that situation of deep love, there is a kind of ecstasy, a kind of bliss, which is not experienced here in this material world, in material relationships. When we feel separation from a loved one, there is only sorrow. And that sorrow leads one to depression and all sorts of negativities. But the separation from Krishna on the platform of pure love does give rise to a form of spiritual grief which is not easily understood by the ordinary person of this world. Because on that exalted platform of separation from Krishna, grief is equal to bliss. So in that grief, there is a certain strange kind of bliss. It's still perceived as grief. The devotees still grieve, but there is a higher spiritual ecstasy which cannot be explained by those who do not experience that. And that experience is actually the highest perfection of our life. This is what Srila Prabhupada explains following the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Srila Prabhupada says that we should also try to love Krishna like this. We should not try to think, okay, now I have found Krishna. Now I have loved Krishna sufficiently. Now I am the highest devotee of Krishna. Prabhupada says the six Goswamis of Vrindavan were always searching for Krishna. Even though they were situated on a very exalted platform of love for Krishna, they never said, I have found Krishna. Or I have seen Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. No, they never say like that. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Srinivas Acharya says in his famous Shat Goswami Ishtakam, हे राधे व्रज देविके च ललिते हे नंद सुन कुत श्री गोवर्धन कल्प पाद पतले कालिंदी वंजे कुत घोषंता विति सर्वतो व्रज पुरे खेदे महाविह्वलो वंदे रूप सनातनो रघुयुगो श्री जीव गो Bhaktivinoda's Acharya explains the activities of the six first families of Vrindavan. Ghosham tau iti sarvato vrajapune. They would loudly declare all over Vrindavan as they wandered here and there. Khede mahavihvalo. Being very agitated and in great distress, feeling separation from Radharani and Krishna and their associates. And what would they be declaring loudly as they traveled around Braja? He Radhe Braja Devi Ke. O Srimati Radharani, the goddess of Vrindavan. He Lalite. O Lalita. Lalita Sakhi is the consort of Sri, or maybe part it is the maid servant or assistant of Srimati Radharani. He Nanda Suna. O son of Nanda Maharaj Krishna, Kutaha, where are you? This would be what they would declare. Sri Govardhana, are you on top of Govardhan Hill? Kalpa Pada Patale Kalindi Vanye. Or are you beneath the wish-fulfilling desire trees on the banks of the Yamuna? Where are you? The six Goswamis of Vrindavan would move around Vraj, experiencing such feelings of separation and declaring this loudly everywhere in Vraj. So Srila Prabhupada explains that this is our ideal standard which we should aspire to attain. This standard of feeling of separation is wanted, Prabhupada said. But of course that comes when there is deep love for Krishna. And that love for Krishna can be aroused when we hear more and more about Krishna, when we chant his holy names and absorb ourselves in his devotional service. So as our service, particularly our hearing and chanting, increases, we will feel ourselves becoming more attracted to Krishna and less attracted to the things and pleasures of this world. That is an indication that we are advancing in Krishna consciousness. So Mother Earth is remembering Krishna in the time of her grief. And even more that separation increases. Because in grief we like to take shelter of those we love. And for a devotee, the love for Krishna is so great that in times of difficulty, very spontaneously the devotee takes shelter of Krishna. And then she goes on to say, she thinks of the different divine qualities of Krishna, like his smile, sweet smile of love, his pleasing glances, his hearty appeals, the way he would speak. So Krishna has innumerable spiritual qualities. And it is these spiritual qualities that make Krishna all attractive. He is irresistible. And it is indeed surprising that people are still not attracted to him. Why so? Who has the power to resist Krishna's attraction? Who can cause us to resist that attraction? It's only Krishna. Through his Maya Shakti, his power of illusion. It is only Krishna who can prevent us from being attracted to Krishna. No one else. And Krishna does that because we do not want to be attracted to Krishna. So Krishna fulfills our desire and says, so be it. You want to forget me, you don't want to love me, so that you love my illusory potency, Maya. And you remain here within this material world, being attracted by the temporary things of this world. But for those who desire to love Krishna, Krishna provides all the possible facilities to increase that love. And in particular, he gives us the opportunity to hear about his glories and his divine qualities. Mother Earth is remembering Krishna's divine qualities by which he could conquer even temperamental queens like Satyabhama, who were quite feisty or fiery by nature sometimes. But by his divine qualities, Krishna would easily control them. So Krishna's attractive power is so great that it subdues everyone. All the powerful personalities of the great demigods, even like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Lakshmi Devi, and all the consorts of the Lord in Dwarka, in Vrindavan, all are subdued by the great power of Krishna's attractive qualities. And then she begins to reflect on her own great fortune. And she says that when Krishna traversed my surface, and I would be immersed in the dust of his lotus feet. Because Krishna would walk upon the earth, and therefore his feet would contact the dust, and the dust would fly, and the dust would, she would become immersed in the dust of his lotus feet. And because of the touch of the lotus feet, or the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna, she would experience great ecstasy. Generally, when there is great happiness, the hairs on the body may also stand on end. Of course, the hairs on our body may stand on end in numerous circumstances. Even in great fear, or in great excitement. So also in great ecstasy sometimes the hairs of the body stand on end. So Mother Earth says that my bodily ecstasy is represented by the blades of grass that grow profusely on my surface. So the blades of grass growing out of the soil represent the hairs of Mother Earth standing on end in ecstasy because Krishna is traversing the surface and distributing the dust of his lotus feet everywhere on her surface. So this is something very, very special. In fact, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 21st chapter, which is the famous song, the flute song, the Venu Geet of Krishna, the gopis are talking amongst each other. And they chant a very nice verse. Vrindavanam sakibhuvo vitanoti kirtin yad devaki sutapadam bhujalabdha lakshmi govinda venu marumatta mayura nityam prekshyadvisanu avaratamya samasta sattvam. The gopis are talking to each other. And they're saying, just see how this holy land of Vrindavan is expanding the glories of Mother Earth. Vitanoti kirtin. Kirti means the glories. Vitanoti means to expand. Bhuvaha refers to Mother Earth. So the gopis are saying this Vrindavan is expanding the glories of Mother Earth. Why so? Yad Devaki Suta. Devaki is the son or is the mother of Krishna. Incidentally, Devaki is also another name for Yashoda. Devaki is the wife of Vasudeva in Mathura. And Yashoda is the wife of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. So in Vrindavan, Krishna's mother is Yashoda. But the Acharyas explain that another name of Yashoda is also Devaki. So Mother Yashoda has two names, Yashoda and Devaki. And the Devaki of Mathura is different. So when it says Yad Devaki Suta, the son of Devaki, we understand it to mean the son of Yashoda. So Vrindavan is glorious because this Vrindavan has obtained a very rare treasure, Labdha Lakshmi. Lakshmi refers to treasure. Labdha means to obtain. So what treasure has this holy land of Vrindavan obtained? Devaki Suta Padam Puja. Vrindavan has obtained the treasure of the lotus feet of the son of Yashoda, of Krishna. In other words, the imprints of Krishna's lotus feet on the holy land of Vrindavan is Vrindavan's greatest treasure. The greatest treasure of Vrindavan are not dollars and jewels and gems and so on, or gold and silver, but the greatest wealth of Vrindavan are the imprints of Krishna's lotus feet on the dust of Vrindavan. And a special feature of Vrindavan is that Krishna plays his flute there, which he doesn't do anyone else. Therefore the gopis say, Govinda Venu Anumatta Mayura Nityam. When Krishna plays his flute, the peacocks gather around him and they start dancing. I don't know whether you have peacocks in Australia. You certainly have kangaroos. I don't know if you have peacocks here. But peacocks are very famous for two things. One, because of their beauty, and two, because of their dancing. And especially when it starts raining, then the peacocks come out in their full glory and they expand their feathers and they start dancing. They sway from side to side and they start dancing. And this dance of the peacock, especially at the onset of the monsoon, is the most wonderful sight to behold. And the peacock is also a sign of beauty because of its feathers. So we generally wear the feathers to beautify ourselves. So the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in the commentary to this verse that when Krishna started playing the flute, many of the peacocks came to Krishna and said, Krishna, you play the flute very nicely, so please continue playing the flute and make us dance. So happily Krishna played the flute and all the peacocks encircled Krishna and began dancing with their best poses and their best moves. And Krishna became overjoyed to see that. And so thrilled was Krishna that he also joined them in the dance and music. And the peacocks became very happy and very grateful that Krishna had allowed them to dance to the accompaniment of such wonderful music, and that he had also danced himself with them. So out of gratitude, they presented him a feather, peacock feather. And from that day on, Krishna accepted the peacock feather in his hair. So that's why you see Krishna with the peacock feather. There you can see. So that's the story of how Krishna got his peacock feather. So then Krishna was performing such wonderful pastimes with the peacocks. But Preksha, so there were others who were seeing this. And who were they? Samasta Sattvam, Anya Samasta Sattvam, all the other animals of Vrindavan, like the deer and so on. They were standing, Sanu Patri, they were standing on top of the hills and witnessing this most extraordinary sight. And because of seeing this, they were stunned with ecstasy, Avatara. Stunned in devotional ecstasy, witnessing this transcendental dance and music exhibition. So in this verse, we are hearing about the glories of Vrindavan. What is it that makes Vrindavan so special? Therefore, it is understood that Vrindavan is even higher than Vaikuntha. Why so? Because these pastimes don't take place in Vaikuntha. In the Vaikuntha planets, the Lord is present in his four-armed feature as Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayana. And the devotees, the pure devotees of the Lord, who stay with him in the Vaikuntha planets, they basically worship the Lord as the Lord. They understand the Lord to be the Lord. But in Vrindavan, they don't worship Krishna because he is the Lord. They couldn't care less that he is the Lord. They simply love Krishna because he is so attractive. They are helplessly attracted to Krishna. There is no trace of formality. There is no trace of awe and reverence. in the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan as they love Krishna and engage in pastimes with him. Whereas in the Vaikuntha planets, there is that sense of formality that restricts or inhibits the free-flowing, spontaneous love towards the Lord. And what restricts it is the understanding or awareness that he is the Lord, he is God, and I am the servant. So there is a natural restriction there. But because this barrier doesn't exist in Vrindavan, pastimes such as these can be performed and are performed continuously from time immemorial, and they will continue on eternally into the future. So in Vaikuntha planets, the Lord doesn't play the flute, and you don't find these pastimes going on there. So Vrindavan is special. And all the more special, as we have seen before, because Vrindavan has the treasure of Krishna's lotus feet imprints. The soles of Krishna's feet are imprinted with various symbols. Can you name some of them? What are some of the symbols that are found on Krishna's lotus feet?
Conch,
lotus, flag, thunderbolt, a goat, a disc, and many, many such symptoms as symbols are there. So when Krishna walks on the dust of Vrindavan, then these imprints can be found. And when Krishna would walk into the forest, then these imprints could be found everywhere. So the question that he asked, that Krishna was always surrounded by so many cows and birds and animals and cowherd boys, so how is it that these imprints would not get obliterated because everyone was walking all over? And the acharyas explain that everyone in Vrindavan understands the true wealth of Vrindavan, and they preserve these imprints. Whenever they see these imprints with the gold and the disc and the lotus and so on, they make sure they don't step on it. So these lotus, the feet imprints of Krishna are preserved very carefully as the great treasures of Vrindavan. Just as in any country they preserve the heritage items, just like we preserve Srila Prabhupada's personal paraphernalia carefully in his rooms there. So the residents of Vrindavan, they preserve carefully the imprints of Krishna's lotus feet because they understand what a great treasure they are. So all over Vrindavan, we find that Vrindavan is decorated by these lotus feet imprints. And this is the special feature of Vrindavan. This is the wealth of Vrindavan. Sanatana Goswami explains that in Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan wears slippers, wears footwear. So his lotus feet do not come directly in contact with the dust. So the dust of the Vaikuntha planets doesn't have the imprints of the lotus feet of the Lord, because he has footwear. But in Vrindavan, Krishna goes bare feet. He doesn't wear slippers or shoes or footwear of any kind. So therefore, the contact of Krishna's lotus feet with the soil of Vrindavan is direct, whereas in Vaikuntha, it is indirect. And why does Krishna not wear footwear? One time as Krishna was growing up, and he wanted to go out and graze the calves, he was still an infant. But because his father was a cowherder, and everyone in Vrindavan was herding cows, so it came naturally to Krishna. And Mother Yashoda was concerned that her child Krishna going out into the forest would hurt his feet. The soles of his feet would be pricked with thorns and pebbles and so on. So she asked Krishna to wear footwear, and she had nice footwear prepared for him. But Krishna says, no, I can't wear this footwear alone. If you want me to wear footwear or slippers, then you must also provide footwear for each of my cows. And you know that Nanda Maharaj had many hundreds of thousands of cows. And incidentally, each cow has four legs. Which means two pairs of shoes for each cow, and hundreds of thousands of such cows, which means Mother Yashoda would have to come up with an entire factory of shoes, which didn't exist in those days. So Mother Yashoda gave up hopes of providing footwear to Krishna, and Krishna remained insistent that he would wear shoes only if the cows had shoes. And that's why Krishna moves around Vrindavan bare feet. And that's why the imprints of his lotus feet are to be found everywhere. When Akrura came to Vrindavan from Mathura at the behest of Kamsa, as soon as he entered, he saw the footprints, even as he was on his chariot. And immediately he stopped his chariot, descended from it, and rolled in the dust of Vrindavan. And smeared his entire body with the dust of Vrindavan, because this dust was not ordinary dust. It was dust that had been contacted with the lotus feet of Krishna. Till today, it is a custom of devotees that when you go to Vrindavan, especially when you go to certain places, you roll in that dust. How many of you have been to Vrindavan? Okay. And how many of you, having been to Vrindavan, have not rolled in the dust of Vrindavan? Raise your hand. Everyone has rolled? You have rolled in the dust of Vrindavan? So make sure you do that the next time. Following in the footsteps of Akrura. Go and roll. Give up all inhibitions of who you may be in the outside world. And roll in a carefree manner, just like Akrura did. Akrura was a big man, a minister from a royal family. He didn't think, oh, what are other people going to say if they see me rolling in the dust like a madman? But he got down and he started rolling in the dust of Vrindavan. Similarly, what to speak of appreciating the glories of the dust from Krishna's lotus feet? Great devotees like Brahma and Uddhava, they also desire the dust from the lotus feet of Krishna's dear devotees, the gopis of Vrindavan. And so they express a wish to take birth in Vrindavan as blades of grass, because the gopis would always be traversing or walking across the grass, and the dust from the lotus feet would come on the blades of grass to fall on their heads. This is the exalted nature of the land of Vrindavan. And of all places, the earth is special in the entire universe. Why so? Not cosmologically or geographically, considering the situation, the earth is just an ordinary middle-level planet, where people who are intermediate between the demons and the demigods reside. The people of the earth don't have mystic powers like the demigods do. We are not as intelligent or as powerful or as beautiful as the demigods are. We are utterly insignificant in comparison to the demigods. The beauty of the heavenly planets is incomparable. The earth planet is not at all beautiful in comparison to the heavens. But still, the earth is considered the most fortunate and the best among all the planets of the universe. Why is that? Because it is on the earth that Krishna has manifested Vrindavan. Vrindavan was manifest not in Swargaloka, in Brahmaloka, Satyaloka, Tapaloka, Atala, Vitala, Sutala, or all the other planetary systems of the universe. Rather, it was on earth that Vrindavan was manifest. Therefore, earth becomes special. And why is Vrindavan special? Because all these pastimes are taking place, and because the lotus feet imprints of the Lord are there in Vrindavan. Therefore, because Vrindavan is present on the earth, the glories of the earth are expanded. So the earth becomes glorious because of the presence of Vrindavan, because of the presence of Krishna's lotus feet. And Mother Earth says the same thing here. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that sometimes Krishna, or often actually, Krishna would be away from Dwarka on business. Sometimes there was a war, he had to go and deal with the enemy forces, and he had to go and fight because he was playing the role of Kshatriya. Sometimes he had to go to Hastinapur to be with his friend and devotee Arjuna. Or sometimes he had to go for some other business. So he would be away from his queens in Dwarka, often and for lengths of time. But Mother Earth says, I was more fortunate than the queens of Dwarka. Because so long as Krishna was on the earth, he always traversed my service. So I was never separated from Krishna. Whereas even his queens were on occasion separated from him. Such was my great fortune. But now, alas, I feel the separation. Because Krishna has left me, left my planet, and he has departed for his own abode in the spiritual world. So now no longer do his lotus feet traverse upon my surface. So she is grieving, and she is feeling intense pangs of separation. And reminding personified religion, Dharma, about the glories of the Lord. So that Dharma also starts feeling this separation and consequently the intense spiritual bliss. And in this way, as Mother Earth is engaged in conversation with Dharma, there arrives on the scene the great Maharaj Parikshit. This discussion was taking place on the banks of the Saraswati River. And with this we come to a close of chapter 16. And what happened when Maharaj Parikshit came there at this spot, what he saw and what he said and did is the subject of the next chapter, chapter 17. And if you would like to know what exactly happened, you will have to come here same time, same place tomorrow. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or any comments? Yes.
You said that one stage person can see Krishna everywhere.
Right? Say that again.
Devotee can start seeing Krishna in everything and everywhere. Mm-hmm. So why will they feel separation from Krishna if they see Krishna everywhere? Why does the separation come into picture?
So the question is, it's a good question, that if the pure devotees see Krishna everywhere and in everything, then why do they feel separation? Yes, in one sense they don't feel separation. Let's take the case of the residents of Vrindavan. Because they were constantly thinking of Krishna, they were always with Krishna. So from that point of view, they were not away from Krishna, there was no separation. But when we talk of separation, we talk of physical separation. From the physical form of Krishna, with whom they were accustomed to associate. He had been with them for almost 10.5 years, physically, in his physical form, and now he left. So even though Krishna is absolute, there is no difference between his physical presence and the presence in the consciousness of the mind, still there is a sense of separation from the physical form of Krishna. So That is the form of separation that we are talking about. Any other question? Yes.
Maharaj, in the just in the earlier verse, it was mentioned that the bull is standing on one leg. Now we understand that out of the four qualities, truthfulness is still left, whereas mercy, austerity, and cleanliness is one. But when we see Kali Yuga, how do we understand that truthfulness is still left, whereas the others are not left?
Okay, the question is that it was mentioned in the earlier part of this chapter that personified religion of Dharma is standing on one leg. The other three legs have been destroyed or injured very badly. And there's only one leg remaining. The four legs of personified Dharma represent the four principles of religion: mercy, austerity, truthfulness, and cleanliness. And there's only one leg on which that bull is standing, and that's truthfulness. But even in Kali Yuga, we see there is hardly any truthfulness left. So how do we understand this? That's the question. Well, you are right. Three legs are practically gone, and there's only one leg, but the bull of religion is tottering even now on this one leg, because even this one leg is badly damaged, badly injured. At least something's there. Something. But still, yes, you're right, even that leg is badly injured. So we are in a very precarious position in this age of Kali, and there is only one way, and that is to take shelter of Krishna. So that gradually this bull, the personified religion, can be revived, and its legs also can be healed. That can only happen by Krishna consciousness. Okay. Yes?
We assume that that truthfulness that bull standing on is the Bhagavatam and the words of Śrīla Prabhupāda, Sādhu, Guru, and Shastra. This is the bit of truth that's left, and the rest of it's a little bit wobbly. This is the only bit that's the truth that's left.
Okay, that's also a good point, a good question. That the leg that represents truthfulness, is it the Śrīla Bhāgavatam and the Bhakti scriptures, does that represent truthfulness? Well, yes, certainly. But also there's some degree of truthfulness still left, even in ordinary terms. In a higher sense, truthfulness refers to the absolute truth. But in this context, these four legs, they basically talk about sub-religious principles. And where Krishna consciousness exists, these four sub-religious principles automatically exist. So yes, both things are right. There is the Bhagavatam and the great scriptures in pursuance of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But also mundane truthfulness exists to some very small degree. Something is there. Not everybody lies all the time. So it's just something still remaining. Yes.
I've got two other things I'd like to say. One is, how many footprints are actually found in Vrindavan? Fossilized footprints.
How many footprints?
How many are there now that we've got?
Sorry?
How many are there that we can see in manifest form?
How many are there which you can see now?
Yeah.
Well, now, physically, nothing.
Nothing in fossilized form.
No, nothing can be seen now. 5,000 years after Krishna's departure. When we talk of the footprints we preserve by the residents of Vrindavan, we mean 5,000 years ago in Krishna's presence. But after that, everything became unmanifest to ordinary vision.
But it is possible there might be some there that we can't see.
Well, on the spiritual platform, it's still present, but we cannot understand
not
it.
Any
as we see in Vrindavan, the physical Vrindavan as it exists now, we can't see any of those footprints.
Another thing was, that dust that was on Krishna's feet, they were all rolling, and surely that's been blown all around the world by now, so the whole world must have a little bit of that dust blown around after 5,000 years. You know, they've been blowing it. Because I was going to say, when you ask about rolling in the dust, when I was there it was very dusty, you didn't have to roll in it, just blew it.
Oh, so, sorry, I'm having a little difficulty following your accent.
Oh.
Let me see if I've understood you correctly. What you're saying is that the dust of Vrindavan is spread everywhere over the earth.
Must be by after 5,000 years, but from the wind and etc.
Yes, especially because of wonderful devotees like you. You have come here from and you come here to Melbourne and you spread the dust. The dust of Vrindavan we're talking about is not simply the dust, physical dust, but we're also talking about those instructions of the Lord, which when followed will lead us to attain the position of pure love of Godhead. So that's really the implication of the dust. So Srila Prabhupada took the dust of Vrindavan everywhere. Physically he took something also, but more importantly he took the instructions of Krishna consciousness. He took his pure devotion to him and spread it everywhere. Yes.
Thank you so much for the mic. Maharaj, you spoke about rolling in the dust of Vrindavan. So Akrura was having a high consciousness that he was able to understand the speciality of the dust. For us, if we go, do we have to wait till we develop the consciousness of Akrura before we go?
The question is, should we develop the consciousness of Akrura first and then roll? So the answer is, you first roll and then you will develop the consciousness. Yes.
One thing you mentioned, the peacock feather in Krishna's hat, which is a point of contention in Lord Chaitanya's hat.
Yes.
I was going to mention the time when Krishna turned into a peacock himself on Radharani's lap. He actually turned into a peacock.
Yes, there are pastimes in which Krishna becomes like a peacock. There's so many such pastimes in Vrindavan. Yes. Any other questions? Yes. Question is that we see in the early ages that Mother Earth would reciprocate sumptuously with the residents, and she would provide amply for all the citizens, and the earth would provide, mud would provide fruits and vegetation and so on. But now we see that Mother Earth is not so effusive in her reciprocation. She holds back in Kali Yuga. So she's the mother, and she still does not love her children. Yes, she does. But you see, every mother has her limits of tolerance. Those of you who are mothers, you know. And there comes a point where you say, enough is enough. Yes? And today I'm not going to feed you because you've been doing too much mischief. No dinner for you tonight, you sit quietly here in the corner. Do my mischief. So because we've been doing too much mischief, so Mother Earth gives us a little rap on the knuckles, a little punishment, keeping away some of the provisions. So if we become good boys and good girls, then Mother Earth will give us everything. Becoming good boys and good girls means to become good devotees of Krishna. Then Mother Earth will be very happy and provide us everything we need and more. Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Antara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Om Premanande.
Hare Hare
Krishna.
Kanti Maharaj ji.
Yes.